Hi again, everybody. I'm Dan Hoard, and this is the Bengals Booth Podcast, our first preview edition of the 2017 season. Coming up, everything you'll need to know to get ready for Sunday's season opening matchup against the Baltimore Ravens, including why Dave Lapham compares Joe Flacco to riding a go-kart on the Autobahn. Trust me, it'll make sense. We'll get the Baltimore perspective on Sunday's game from the voice of the Ravens, Jerry Sandusky. That's Jerry with a G. And we'll look at how A.J. Green has historically destroyed Baltimore, including a radio replay from the last time the Bengals opened the season against the Ravens. As the Bengals celebrate their 50th season, we'll visit with one of their all-time best offensive linemen, Willie Anderson. And in today's last lap, Dave Lapham takes a look back at his five most memorable season openers in 41 seasons as a Bengals player and broadcaster. We'll get to all of that in just a moment, but first, here's a quick reminder to please subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play. And if you enjoy it, please take the time to give us a favorable rating. That will help others find the Bengals Booth Podcast. So, away we go. It's opening week of the Bengals' 50th season, and for the first time since 2009, they open at home. The opponent? The Baltimore Ravens, who went 8-8 last year and missed the playoffs for the third time in the last four seasons. In fact, since winning the Super Bowl in 2012, the Ravens have a losing record at 31-33. Dave Lapham joins me now to take a look at three big questions going into the game. Lap, Ravens quarterback Joe Flacco basically missed all of training camp with a bad back. He only started practicing last Saturday. If you are the Bengals defense, how do you capitalize?
Play fast. I mean, as fast as you possibly can, super speed. I know that Paul Gunther has gotten in Joe Flacco's head many times with double A-gap blitz and a lot of sophisticated looks out of it and everything. But particularly when I have young guys in the field, I would just let their speed dominate. You know, I'd keep it a little simpler and make sure that they don't have any assignment error breakdowns, because Joe Flacco, it's like going into a heavyweight fight without sparring once. I mean, he's going to go from zero to game speed when they've gone through the training camp phase of it. And it's going to be like he's in the Autobahn and he's driving a go-kart. I mean, the adjustment to the team speed part of it, I think, is going to be really, really hard for Joe Flacco at the quarterback position. I think is one of the big stories of the game.
Lap, the Ravens have a great defense. They finished seventh in the NFL in yards allowed last year. They only gave up 3.7 yards per rush. What makes Baltimore so tough on D?
Well, I think it's the attention they pay to it in terms of Ozzie Newsome, you know, with the draft this year, all the need that they had with Steve Smith retiring and everything. They didn't draft any skill players offensively. They drafted four straight defensive picks. He wants to make that defense younger, better, faster. And, you know, you have guys like Suggs. You have guys like Brandon Williams. You have guys like C.J. Mosley. You know, they didn't draft very well in the back end. A lot of guys didn't produce and perform for them. They go out, they get Weddle. They get Jefferson, you know, two veteran safeties. They go out and get Brandon Carr at corner. They've spent the fifth most in the NFL on the back end at the in the secondary positions. So Ozzie Newsome wants to build that defense with personnel, however, by hook or by crook, however they're going to do it. And then they go out, and there's a history and tradition of performing at a high level. And Dean Pease is very creative, and he does things that fit his personnel with a schematic standpoint. And they're tough. They're just tough to take care of in terms of sustaining drives and putting a lot of points on the board. That's been their formula for success ever since 2000 when they won the Super Bowl.
Lap, the Bengals only scored three offensive touchdowns in the preseason, only one by the starting offense, only one in the last three games. How concerned should we be?
Yeah, I'm most concerned with the number ones, obviously. The others, I mean, a lot of the guys aren't even, didn't even make the roster necessarily. But I think the fact that they had so much trouble in the red zone last year, Dan, and, you know, then the first couple of preseason games, that, you know, rose its ugly head again. And then they did score a red zone touchdown in Washington, finalizing a 15-play drive, which was a good sign. And then the very next possession, they have a exchange problem and fumble the football. So, you know, there's some inconsistency there. And they are going to have to figure it out, and they are going to have to be able to execute in the red zone, particularly against this Baltimore Raven defense. They're not going to get a whole lot of opportunity down there. So when you get down there, I think you have to capitalize. And this one looks like it's going to be a defensive slobber knocker. You know, I mean, both defenses, I think, are playing at a higher level than their respective offenses in the early stages of the season, potentially, particularly with the Bengals offensive line trying to, you know, gel and become a real solid unit. So They've been up and down and in between. So, I just think that offensively they're going to have to hold up their end of the bargain. And if they're not scoring a ton of points, Dan, they cannot give the football away. I mean, you just can't do it. The Bengals are 10-0 when they win the turnover ratio and 2-9 when they lose it in 17 games in the Marvin Lewis era, what hasn't been even turnover deal. So, you know, you lose more games than you win with mistakes, and you can't make mistakes against this Baltimore Raven football team offensively.
Despite not having Flacco in the preseason, the Ravens went 4-0, and defense was the reason. In those games, Baltimore gave up 3, 7, 9, and 13 points. They were number one in the NFL at stopping the run at 67 yards a game, and number one at stopping the pass at 139.5 yards a game. I'd be shocked if this was a high-scoring game. The over-under is 42.5. Now time to spend 5 minutes getting the Baltimore perspective from the voice of the Ravens, Jerry Sandusky. No relation, in case you're wondering. He joined Lapp and me on Bengals game plan this Wednesday, and we started by asking Jerry how concerned the Ravens are about their offense, considering that Joe Flacco basically missed all of training camp with a bad back before practicing for the first time last Saturday.
But I think common sense tells you that you're going to have rust. You're going to have some timing issues. You're going to have some things that, you know, get worked out and look seamless for quarterbacks and offensive linemen and receivers in training camp that, you know, if that stuff wasn't important, they wouldn't have training camp. So I think common sense tells you that there's clearly an issue there. But I was thinking about this earlier today. 10 years ago, John Harbaugh's a rookie head coach. Kyle Bowler is expected to be his starting quarterback, and he gets a season-ending injury. Troy Smith is the backup quarterback, and he gets some crazy illness that is wiped out and can't play. And suddenly the regular season rolls around, and Harbaugh has to get his team ready to play with this rookie quarterback that knew very little about, a kid named Joe Flacco. So here it is 10 years later, and he's got to get this veteran team ready to play with a quarterback that they haven't seen all summer named Joe Flacco. So in a sense, they have been through this before a decade ago.
That's very interesting. I think no matter who plays quarterback, they ran the ball the third fewest times in the NFL. And Joe Flacco, the only guy that threw the ball more than him was Drew Brees, who threw it one more attempt than Joe Flacco, 673 to 672. I mean, I think that, you know, in my mind, with the defense you've got in the special teams area covered so well, run the football, take the pressure off whoever's playing quarterback. Isn't that a big key to the success of the Ravens during the season all year long, is getting a consistent ground game?
And I think you hit it right on the head, because it's what the Ravens focused on throughout the offseason. They came out of last year, and the first thing John Harbaugh talked about was, we've got to be a more balanced offense, because even in today's modern era of the passing league, if you don't have a good running attack, it's hard to put opponents away, especially on the road.
Right.
You know, last year, the Ravens were 2-6 on the road, and it's not a coincidence that they had so few franchise record fewest rushing attempts. They threw the ball an imbalanced number of times. So now I think they looked at all the pieces on the board and said, we need a better running attack. Now, I think it's important for listeners to understand that it's not that you try to build some big rushing juggernaut and go out and just run the ball 30 times the first 30 plays you have on offense and say, good, we're going to win now.
Right.
It's still a passing league in that, for the most part, you get the lead with your ability to throw the ball. But you keep your defense off the field with your ability to run the ball, and you turn the game into a game of position and possession. Look, the whole country saw the Falcons screw that up in the Super Bowl last year.
No doubt.
You have the lead, you keep the lead. You have the lead, you get it with your passing game, but you keep the lead with your running game and your defense. The Ravens clearly have the defense. They've got great special teams kickers. So now the missing piece really wasn't Joe Flacco throwing for 5,000 yards. It's going back to the ability to run the ball effectively. If you look in the first 6 years under John Harbaugh, when the Ravens make the playoffs six times, they were always in the top 15 rushing. If you look when they have missed the playoffs, they've been in the bottom five in rushing. So your sense is spot on that this is a team that has to run the ball to have success.
The voice of the Ravens, Jerry Sandusky, is our guest. Both teams have question marks on the offensive line. The Ravens have maybe the best guard in the league in Marshall Yanda. The left tackle, Ronnie Stanley, looks like he's going to be a good NFL player for a long time. But how's the rest of that group?
Well, I think we're going to find out. Ryan Jensen plays next to Marshall Yanda as the center. And what I like about that is Marshall Yanda is so physical. And Ryan Jensen is not nearly the caliber player of Marshall Yanda, but he's really physical. He's really intense, kind of a defensive line mindset, not an offensive line mindset. So you have a really great aggressive middle. James Hurst is a guy who's played all along this line. He has played literally every position on the offensive line. He's more of a true journeyman, probably a backup tackle, might be a solid guard. He's not going to be a Pro Bowl contender. To me, the key is going to be Austin Howard. We don't know what we have with Austin Howard. You know who Marshall Yanda is. You know who Ronnie Stanley is. I think we know who Jensen is and who Hurst are. Austin Howard, the first week he got here after the deal with the Raiders, I mean, he looked terrible. Like, everybody's looking around saying they paid this guy $15 million. And then a week later, all of a sudden, he looked like a big body who could move people off the ball and get some things done. So if he's going to be a consistent impact player, then you feel good about the offensive line. You feel good about the running game. You feel much better about the offense. If he's not the guy they paid for, then the dominoes start to fall in the other direction. So to me, that's one of the things they have to find out very early Sunday at your place. What do they have at right tackle?
If you think the Bengals have a lot of new faces this year, it pales in comparison to the Ravens, who lost Elvis Dumervil, Dennis Pitta, Kyle Juszczyk, Steve Smith Sr., and Kenneth Dixon, among others, from last year's team. The last time the Bengals opened the season against Baltimore was 2014. The Bengals blew a 15-point halftime lead as Baltimore went ahead on an 80-yard touchdown pass to Steve Smith Sr. with 5 minutes and 46 seconds to go. But two plays later, A.J. Green did this.
Bengals have the ball at their own 23. Dalton takes a shotgun snap against a five-man rush. He's going to fire deep. A.J. Green is open.
On,
he bobbles it.
Oh,
he's
yeah.
got it at
yeah.
the 20. Great
on,
cut. Still
yeah.
running 10.
Yeah.
5.
Ooh.
Touchdown.
Ooh.
Adriel Jeremiah Green, 77 yards. The former juggler as a kid made a juggling catch and took it to the house to give the Bengals a 21-16 lead.
In his last five games against Baltimore, A.J. has at least one touchdown catch in every game and has averaged six catches for 127 yards. A.J. suffered his season-ending hamstring injury in Game 10 last year, and the Bengals didn't play Baltimore for the first time until the following week, meaning the Ravens didn't have to face A.J. Green in either game. No such luck for John Harbaugh and his team this time around.
I think I was the first coach to go on record saying that he's the best in the league. And that was pretty good, maybe 5 years ago, 6 years ago. So, I stand by that. I think he's a great player, and he's proven it.
AJ, after missing the tail end of last year, how eager are you to play in a real game again?
I'm ready. Like I said, man, I got a little taste with preseason. This season opener is always the most craziest. First game because everybody's adrenaline is pumping, nerves are going all over the place. So I'm just excited to get out there.
You're facing a great defense. That's the thing that stands out about Baltimore, right?
They always great. My past couple of years, my 7 years I've been here, no games have been easy. We already know what kind of battle it's going to be. So.
How do you feel even better this year than you have before, assuming that you do? I mean, you've looked great in camp.
I feel good. My body feels good. I don't know, man. I just feel more comfortable. Like, as the years go along, I feel more comfortable here. Being with Andy for the last 7 years, that helps. So, like I said, man, I just feel good and, just ready to get the season started.
Talk about that relationship with Andy. Have you reached the point where you guys can, like, finish each other's sentences?
We're close. We're close to that. Like I said, we have a great relationship on and off the field, so I think that would help. We're friends off the field as well, so it makes everything else easy on the field.
I don't think anything will come easily for the Bengals offense on Sunday, but we'll see if they can win their season opener for the fourth straight year. By the way, here's a trivia nugget for you. Marvin Lewis's streak of three straight season opening day wins is the longest such streak of any active coach in the NFL. As part of the celebration of the Bengals' 50th season, fans and media members have selected the top 50 retired players in franchise history. They will be recognized at every regular season home game this year, and this Sunday against Baltimore, Ken Anderson, Isaac Curtis, Lamar Parrish, and Ken Riley are among the players that will be in attendance at Paul Brown Stadium. We'll be visiting with members of the First 50 throughout the year on the Bengals Booth podcast. And this week, Lapp and I check in with one of the greatest offensive linemen ever to wear Bengals stripes. We have a great opportunity to visit with a guy who checked in at number 14 on the Bengals' First 50, the list of the top 50 retired players in franchise history. More significantly, the top right tackle in Bengals history, the great Willie Anderson. Yes. Willie, what was your reaction when you saw that you came in 14th on the list?
Definitely, I was happy. You know, I've been one of the guys, I think, along with Lapp and a couple of the former players that's been kind of boosting and pushing for some kind of recognition. I think the team's always invited guys back, but I think something organized and to show the whole focus points to bring fans and media guys together to kind of pick off who the top players were, I think it's a great thing for all guys. I think it's a great thing for the organization. I think it's a great thing for us nationally, too, as an organization. And more importantly, for the former guys that meant so much. You know, I was talking to Max Montoya today, and I was telling him that in 88 in Mobile, they only showed four or five games back in 88. It was the Bills, the Cowboys, Saints, and the Bengals. So I watched more Bengal games as a kid and knew about Bengal players. But I was telling him, I said, also, I didn't know how good he and Anthony were, you know. But once I got in college, I realized, hey, man, that team that was pretty good in 88, they're the best damn line. Then once I got here, you know, 8 years later, I got here, you know, and was still playing with Joe Walters. And so to me, those guys mean a lot for me. A guy like Joe helped start my career off. So me, I'm always talking about the past because, you know, myself, you know, I give guys like Joe Walters a lot of credit for bringing me in the league. And so the past is always a big thing for me.
Willie, not only were you a dominant player physically, I mean, you were the most powerful offensive lineman we've ever had here, bar none. I mean, you had innate power. There's no question about it. But the thing that impressed me, with all great players, they have to have supreme football IQ. And your IQ is as good as I've ever seen in terms of not knowing what you're supposed to do, but why you're supposed to do it, what's going on around you, all that kind of stuff. Where did that all come from?
Just I've been fortunate enough to have good coaching at every level. I know people say it all the time, but in high school I had a very good coach, Coach Roger Dearman. Went to Auburn and had Coach Rick Trickett, who's now in Florida State, well-renowned guy. Then got ahead and got Paul. You know, I caught Paul at a young age where we both kind of grew together and learned the game of football together, learned the game of line play together. And it really taught me – Paul gave me an opportunity to learn. And as I got older, coach other guys up. You know, it was my job to coach some of the guys. And I eventually coached my way out of the league. When I got Stacey Andrews ready, prepared, and Stacey replaced me here. You know, so the best lineman are that way. Whitworth was that way. You know, I talked to Joe Thomas at camp with Cleveland last week. He's that way. Anthony was that way. You was that way. The great ones want to know why, and they can have a full conversation with coaches about the breakdown of a play.
You were talking about Paul Alexander, your offensive line coach, who's still here with the Bengals. He wrote a book a couple of years ago called Perform, and Paul has a wide variety of interests, including concert pianists and so forth. So in this book, he talks about Mozart being a genius, Chopin being a genius, and he refers to you as a genius for offensive line play.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. I got to find that book, Paul, because I forgot about that. But that was one thing he always told me. He said, you know, he used to tell guys that I just knew how to block. I told him today, I said, I don't know why I knew how to do that. I just knew how to I knew how to do it so well that I couldn't do it wrong. A friend of mine told me the definition of a pro and an amateur is an amateur practices until he gets it right, and a pro does it so long that he can't do it wrong. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So that's kind of the words I tell my guys. I told my son that. I tell the guys that I train and work with now, like, you got to do it over and over. That it's in your conscience that you can't do it wrong. You got to see blocks happening. Every other position does. The quarterbacks talk about seeing and reading the game cerebral before plays happen. Well, lineman does it, do it the most. I mean, what other five guys on the field that has to take in the most information than us and relay it to each other, then go out and fight an individual battle? that's line play. So knowing how to block and being able to explain it, that's kind of why I teach it now, because I know how to explain it, because I always cared about the basis of it and why is this play being blocked this way? You know, why are we running this way? We all want to know the whole entire play, and I think Paul done a good job of that over the years, teaching his linemen to learn the why. A
couple more questions for four-time Pro Bowler Willie Anderson. I want to turn the clock back to one of the greatest performances by the offensive line in Bengals history in a specific game, and that was the day Corey Dillon ran for 278 yards on 22 carries against the Denver Broncos, a day where the passing game had three completions all day, none after the first quarter. What was it like to watch Corey do his thing as he ran by you and kept going that day?
No, think about today's passing league and how the football, every level, high school, college, even middle school football, pros, such a passing league. Can anyone play a game with nine passing yards? That's crazy, man. Like, you can't. That's crazy. So to do that, man, like, guys, we were on a different level. Then we always had a good running game. I mean, it could never be great, in my opinion, because we didn't have a passing game those early years. And you kind of felt sorry for Corey and, you know, easy guys on the line because we stayed facing, like, it helped us out because we learned how to block. I guarantee you every lineman that played back then, we all know how to block an 8-man, 9-man front. Right. We can draw it up for you and show you, like, because we saw 8- and 9-man fronts every game. And that day, man, you know, it was funny. I was telling a friend of mine the other day, a friend of mine played for Shanahan in Washington. He used to always talk about Shanahan had no pass. I said, yeah, man, I learned in the Pro Bowl that Shanahan hates wearing pads. And we found out the week before they played us, they hadn't been in pads in 10 weeks. They played us, and we just ran for, 300 yards rushing. And the next week, they were in pass. but everything seemed to work. You know, I think the first 9 carries were for losses, I think. And it was magical watching Corey run because we ran 4 plays, literally. 16 chase and a 26 block. I blocked down, and guard pulled out, and he just run up. It was simple. I mean, it was just him finding a hole, and you getting your guy and just keep pushing and running. He makes one guy miss, and you see him just run for days and days and days and days. And it was like, this is unreal. I mean, it was an unreal experience to have that happen. Because we was in the midst of a bad season. And for you to break a record with no quarterback, it's crazy.
To me, for you to go to 4 Pro Bowls in the era that you played here in Cincinnati is a heck of an accomplishment. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, usually recognition for linemen, unfortunately, it doesn't come until the team's winning a lot of football mm-hmm. games. So that tells me your greatness was even, you know, a cut above. Mm-hmm. How frustrating was it for you until you get that first Pro Bowl? I mean, because you didn't become a hell of a football player all of a sudden 1 year. I mean, you had a lot of great years that people – you just went unnoticed by people. How frustrating was that for you?
It was very frustrating. I remember 2002. My locker was on this end right here and Tequila's at the end, other end.
Right.
And I remember when they announced it, if we both were alone, we probably would have cried. I saw it in his eyes because we knew at that point in time right then – your 6-7 year, your legacy is going to start getting affected now because I'm like, you don't have so many more years to make it. You know, and the years we thought we should have made it, we didn't make it. 2003, I had a good year 2003, and Marvin tells me I made it. I'm like, wow, like, it took me until I'm 28, 29, 30, 31, 32 years old to start making it. Oh, he's playing at a high level. No, I'm not. I may be getting worse. You know what I mean? But the public perception of us was that nobody was good. You know, and Sean Salisbury and Mark Slerick came up to Keel and I at the Pro Bowl that year and said, man, we want to apologize to you guys. I said, why? We're stretching in practice. He said, man, ESPN told us, as much as you can, make fun of the Bengals. It was a national thing. It was what they were being told to do. He said, man, and we realized that hurt guys like you and Tequila. Because when we watch you play, you guys are all pro guys. But you're stuck on that kind of team. And when the national perception is, the only good player is Corey Dillon, you know, get Corey Dillon out of there, he'll be, I mean, he did go be great, I mean, but right. Corey was already great already, but that was the national perception of us to make fun, and the whole Bungles thing came out. That stuff killed us. That killed us, and I just say, ask the guys who played against me. I got beat 12 times in a 13-year career. I went 3 or 4 years with no sacks, and this during the time, I would never say anything about it because I thought that wasn't lineman-like or team to say anything about yourself. Especially when you lose, you can't say, hey, look at me.
Right.
2-14, 3-13. But you're like, damn, like, in the offseason, like, damn, like, somebody look at me. Like, see what I'm doing. Like, we're down 3 touchdowns every game. We're passing the ball 40 times a game, and my guy can't get there. That was my pride. I'm going to take care of my guy. And then we started to win, and we started to get more and more attention. But then, you know, comes to the end. You know, you got to stop playing, then it's over with. You know, so that's my career, man.
It's an unfortunate thing that it took as long as it did for you to get the recognition you deserved. But We're happy that you were named the greatest right tackle in franchise history, because that was definitely deserved. Congratulations on that. Thanks for the time.
Thank you. Who that?
There are new banners on display at Paul Brown Stadium honoring members of the Bengals All-50th team. And it's appropriate, the Dave Lapham and Willie Anderson banners are right next to each other. Speaking of Lap, it's time to wrap things up with the last lap. This week, Dave Lapham looks back at his five most memorable season openers in 41 years as a Bengals player or broadcaster. Are you ready?
Yeah, let's do it, Dan.
We are going to turn the clock back to your second NFL season. You move into the starting lineup for a home opener against the Cleveland Browns. The Bengals win the game 24-17, and your roommate, Ken Anderson, was on fire.
He was. I mean, Kenny and Isaac just ate up the Cleveland Browns, like we mentioned earlier. And, you know, I know Isaac had multiple catches for well over 120 yards. And
six for a buck 27.
And a touchdown, 50-yard touchdown catch. He always beat him deep. I mean, those corners were petrified of Isaac Curtis. I mean, literally petrified. And, you know, the thing about that game, this is my first start, and I'm going against Walter Johnson, who was literally a dancing bear. The guy was a professional wrestler in the offseason, and he would tour the country, just a beast of a guy. And then they had Jerry Shirk, was the other defensive tackle, who was literally a wrestler, a college wrestler at Oklahoma State. So they had a nice tandem. Dick Ambrose was the middle linebacker. I can remember like it was yesterday. And just being so excited, you know, wide-eyed, you know, early young player going against the Cleveland Browns, against a big rivalry, in a big rivalry game. Paul Brown founded both teams, knew that there was hate there. I mean, it was just a heck of an atmosphere. Fun to compete in those kind of games, Dan. There's no doubt about it.
Did you know going into that 1975 training camp that you were probably going to be a starter, or did you win the job in that camp?
I had an idea that I would be given an opportunity to compete. You know, Tiger basically told me when I was a rookie, he said, I'll get you in games, you know, when it's decided one way or the other. And I did play special teams, and I got in quite a few games, you know, just to get exposed to it and the speed of the game and all that sort of thing. And then, you know, he said at training camp, best man wins the position. And so there we went. And Pat Mattson was the lineman that I ended up beating out for that job. And the Bengals traded him to the Green Bay Packers.
We fast forward 6 years to 1981, the Bengals' first Super Bowl season. You're still in the starting lineup at this point. And this game at home against Seattle does not start out well. Seattle jumps out to a 21-0 lead in the first quarter in Cincinnati, and the Bengals came back to win 27-21.
Kenny Anderson has his worst game ever, 2.8 quarterback rating, threw two interceptions. One was a pick six. Like you said, we're down 21-0. Turk Shoden comes in the game. Kenny Anderson's benched. Now, we were talking to Andy Dalton today's press conference. Andy Dalton had a quarterback rating on a Thursday night game of 2.0 against the Cleveland Browns. The next game against the New Orleans Saints, he had his all-time best quarterback rating of over 140. So he went from the outhouse to the penthouse. Ken Anderson went from a 2.8 quarterback rating bench to league MVP in the Super Bowl. Come on now. That's when you know you have a quarterback that can have selective amnesia, put it away, move on. You know, don't let it don't let one bad experience turn into multiple. And we knew, you know, that when Kenny came back and played so well the very next week against the New York Jets, we knew he had something special going. But that game, I credit the coaches because Turk didn't light it up. We ran the football. We had three running backs, our three-headed monster, all around 40, 50 yards for the game. Archie Griffin, Charlie Alexander, Pete Johnson. We controlled the clock from that point in, ran the football, pounded it down their throats, and win the football game. So no panic. When we had that come from behind victory, and we said, you know, obviously 14 can't play any worse, and then the next week go out and play so well against the New York Jets, and off to the races we went.
Those two quarterbacks, by the way, Ken Anderson and Turk Shonert, among the players who will be honored at halftime this Sunday.
That's awesome.
Against Baltimore. It'll be great to see both of them back at the stadium here in Cincinnati. All right, up next, the season opener in 1988, the Bengals' second Super Bowl season. It was a 21-14 win over the then Phoenix Cardinals that featured two key goal line stands.
And that was the remarkable thing. That team, the 1988 Bengals, were an offensive juggernaut. And the reason that home opener was won was because of defensive excellence.
I mean, the last one to end the game, literally the last snap with no time on the clock, first and goal at the 1 yard line, lose yards, you know, lose a couple yards, lose 6 yards, quarterback sack on fourth down. Unbelievable way to finish a football game. And it was defensive excellence that got that team underway and started that season. Then the offense kicked in and got into high gear and stayed in high gear. And Boomer Esiason wins NFL MVP. Kenny wins in an 81. Boomer wins in an 88. But that football game was won totally, specifically, by an outstanding defensive performance in the beginning and end of that football game.
All right, our first three memorable openers on the last lap have all been dramatic wins.
Right.
But we're using the term memorable, not necessarily great. And we go next to 2009, a home game, the last time the Bengals opened up at home against Denver. The Bengals score a touchdown with 38 seconds to go on a run by Cedric Benson. It's their only score of the day. It gave them a 7-6 lead, but the euphoria was short-lived.
It was short-lived. They went to the bullpen trying to protect that one-run lead. And Leon Hall went up to deflect the football. And you hear all the time broadcasters go, knock it down, knock it down. Well, unfortunately, Leon didn't knock it down. He knocked it airborne. Denver Broncos, oh, man, Dan. I mean, you and I both did that football game. I mean, that game was, I mean, you talk about a nightmare. I can still see it. Stokely was a thorn in the Bengals' side with multiple teams, Denver being one of them. 87 yards. And he's running horizontally to use as much time as he can before he crosses the goal line. Oh, my God. That thing was just unbelievable. Both teams obviously didn't play well, but to lose that football game, I thought the Bengals were going to, you know, be able to sneak away with one, but nah, baby, nah. No sneak away there.
All right, let's wrap this up on a more positive note. 2011, the Bengals open in Cleveland with a 27-17 win. It was the start of the Andy Dalton, A.J. Green era. Andy actually suffered an injury on the final play of the first half when he was hit by Phil Taylor, but Bruce Gradkowski comes off the bench, and A.J.'s first NFL catch and only one of that game was a biggie.
Biggie, 41-yarder. The Bengals broke the huddle quickly and went up tempo and got to their formation. And the Cleveland Browns were kind of, you know, stuck in their defensive huddle, kind of half in and half out. And Joe Hayden didn't get all the way out there to cover A.J. Green. And A.J. Green caught a 41-yard touchdown pass. First touchdown catch of his career, won the football game. You know, and Andy Dalton, uncharacteristically, in his first NFL start, got hit by Phil Taylor in the arm, like by the funny bone, and he had no sensation in his throwing hand. His fingers were numb, couldn't grip the football. So he had to miss the second half because of that numbness. And, you know, the football game comes Gradkowski, and he comes out of the bullpen and saves the game, does a hell of a job.
The first win of a playoff season for the Bengals. Hopefully we get something similar this Sunday at home against the Baltimore Ravens.
One thing you can think, Dan, is, so many of these games decided by a touchdown or less. In this matchup with the Ravens, this one has the earmarkings of being a low-scoring, defensive slobber knocker type thing. It might be decided by special teams field position and, in the kicking game. It's going to be very interesting.
And that's going to do it for this edition of the podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play to have the latest episode delivered right to you. And if you enjoy it, please take the time to give us a 5-star rating. I'm Dan Hoard. Thanks for listening to the Bengals Booth Podcast.